City Council will come to order. Carla, please call the roll.
Adams. Fish.
Here.
Leonard.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Potter.
Here. I'd like to remind folks that prior to offering public testimony to City Council, a lobbyist must declare which lobbying entity they are authorized to represent. We have four emergency ordinances to deal with before we go to the 2 p.m. time certain. And the first two require a motion to amend, but we'll get to those. So please read 1470.
Authorize a letter of agreement with Portland Firefighters Association authorizing application of the payroll smoothing process currently authorized for 52.08-hour per week unit members to 42-hour per week unit members assigned to the fire inspector series.
1470 needs an amendment. Please describe the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My name is Steve Herron, Labor Relations Manager for the City of Portland. There's a relatively minor oversight in the declaration in lowercase a. It'll authorize execution as drafted of a letter between the City and Portland Police Association that needs to read Portland Firefighters Association.
Do I have a motion to amend the ordinance?
So moved.
Second.
Please call the vote.
Fish?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. This was heard last Wednesday, and we've already heard testimony, so call the vote on the emergency ordinance.
Fish?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read item 1471.
Authorize a letter of agreement with the City of Portland Professional Employees Association authorizing the city to determine part-time employees' vacation accrual rate based on length of employment in calendar years.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My name is Steve Herron, Labor Relations Manager for the City of Portland. This is a virtual identical error as to the last one in sub A, where it authorizes a letter of agreement between the City and the Portland Police Association that needs to read between the City and the City of Portland Professional Employees Association.
Need a motion to amend the ordinance?
So moved.
Second.
Call the vote.
Fish?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. You've heard testimony. Please call the vote on the emergency.
Fish?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read item 1472.
Authorize a letter of agreement with ASME Local 189, District Council of Trade Unions, to pay parking enforcement officers a 5% premium for actual hours worked on special projects that are duties outside of the job description.
Emergency vote, please call the vote.
Fish.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Potter.
Aye. Please read item 1474.
Assign City Section 108 revolving loan pool application to the Department of Housing and Urban Development to create the Portland Housing Preservation Fund.
Please call the vote.
Fish.
I'd like to again thank Danielle Ledenza and the rest of the staff at the Bureau of Housing and Community Development for their good work on bringing this matter forward, and it will give us some new flexibility to tackle some projects we otherwise would not have the resources to fund at a time when we are trying to jumpstart some local projects during a down economy. Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Good work.
Aye.
Potter.
Aye. Please read the 2 p.m. time certain.
Adopt and implement the North Pearl District Plan.
Please read 1476 with it.
Adopt the action charts and additional implementing measures of the North Pearl District Plan.
Please proceed, folks.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. I'm Joe Zender with the Bureau of Planning. Today, we're having a second meeting on the North Pearl District Plan. We have a presentation of the 7 amendments that were brought forward by public testimony at your last meeting. I'm here with Troy Doss, the project manager from the Bureau of Planning, and Mauricio Leclerc, the project manager from PDOT on this plan. Today, any of the amendments that you want to make to the plan, we would need a motion approving those amendments, and then we would be prepared to come back for a second reading at a separate date. And with that, I'll turn it over to Troy.
Thank you. So I'll just walk you through the amendments very quickly just to remind you of what they were. And I can give you, they are outlined in a memorandum to Mayor Potter and the rest of the commission dated October 20th. And for those in the audience who haven't seen it, it is available over here on this credenza. So the first amendment is one that was brought to you by Jeff Backrack of Riverscape Development, and they had asked that we would repeal some development standards that we had applied to that site as part of the North Pearl plan process. They don't currently apply there, but they do apply to other portions of the Pearl waterfront. Upon further investigation, we found out that there were conditions of approval associated with the land division that affected that site that virtually did the exact same thing as those development standards. So we feel no need to apply those standards, and we would agree with his requested amendment. The second amendment is also a zoning-based amendment, and it was brought before us by Steve Abel representing Summit Properties. It is deals with waterfront properties that are south of the Fremont Bridge adjacent to Centennial Mills. The request is that we would allow for the same bonus height provisions that apply north of the Fremont Bridge to properties south of the Fremont Bridge up to and including the Centennial Mills properties. And what would allow is additional 75 feet through bonuses. We would go ahead and agree with that as well. And I want to just let you know that we put before you a revised version of the zoning amendments package that we brought last time, and it reflects both of these amendments in there. The third amendment actually deals with language from the plan itself. There was an action item that talked about the recommendation of a couplet on Northwest Lovejoy and Northrup between Northwest 10th and Northwest 16th. Rick Michelson brought this before you to say, while we were investigating the ability to put in a couplet there, we should also consider a different alternative that would really result in a eastbound only version of Lovejoy with some left turn movements to the north. We feel that's something we can accommodate. So we have that language in front of you, and this would actually be an amendment to an action item in the plan itself. Staff supports that amendment as well. The next 4 amendments are not recommended by staff, but let me go through them again. One I think we discussed in a little bit of detail last time. It deals with a proposal by Jim Winkler and One Waterfront Development to ask for a 2-to-1 increase in FAR entitlement to the One Waterfront site. We recommended against that based on transportation capacity constraints as well as urban form concerns that we identified and that were reviewed both by us, the Design Commission, and by Planning Commission. The next amendment, and the next 3 amendments actually are from the Northwest District Association. One is a request that we not apply bonus height to the Riverscape site. However, since we've just agreed to that amendment, we feel that that contradicts it, so we don't support that amendment. The next one is asking that if council, Amendment 6 asks that if council does choose to apply bonus height there, that it only do so if a funding package is in place to provide a park that's been discussed at the Riverscape site. We have noted that, though, in the plan itself, there's an action item that discusses that the city would pursue the development of a park there There has been a letter that from Commissioner Salzman and the Parks Bureau that says they'd like to further explore this option. And so we hope the action item covers this idea. Basically, it just says that we would pursue the development of a public park adjacent to the Greenway Trail and proposed arena at the eastern portion of Lot 8 of the Riverscape development site. And that assigns both the City of Portland as well as Riverscape and its successors an interest in pursuing this into the future. The Amendment 7, the final amendment, is a request by the Northwest District to not do any of the FAR increases proposed by the plan until our modeling assumptions and modeling criteria were investigated by a third party. We actually have that already done. ODOT looked at our findings three times, was very concerned about potential impacts as a result of this plan and the FAR we were proposing. They've concurred with our findings and found that our assumptions were adequate. We also have some additional information that has recently come out of another investigation of mode splits in the North Pearl area and the Pearl District at large, and it showed that there's much higher mode splits than even we were anticipating, so we feel even more confident in what our modeling assumptions were. And that concludes my presentation.
When you say higher mode splits, what does that mean?
It means that there's more people actually taking transit, walking, and using bikes than the modeling base assumptions were.
So I have a question. I'm just thinking back to our hearing on the amendments 5, 6, and 7 that brought by the Northwest District Association.
Yes.
The Pearl District Neighborhood Association did not join in those objections. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And could you just explain again to me, it's I was at a barge launching at lunch. And I'm still so overwhelmed by what I saw at Zidell's barge business, seeing this huge thing launched without a glitch and the Campbell fireboat going off and everything else. That
are you going to tie this
get
back?
My focus back to this. But can you walk me again through Amendment 1? Because there were some twists and turns on this one. I just want to make sure I understand.
And actually, you should be clear on that. Yeah, there was actually two amendments before you last time from Mr. Bachrach and Riverscape. One was asking for this, the repeal of a development standards that we were proposing to be applied. The other one was actually asking that we would allow for bonus provisions that currently aren't allowed to the base zone affecting his property.
That's the one that... That yes. generated a lot of attention in our last hearing.
And he has since pulled back that request.
So that's no longer on the table. This is a more modest adjustment.
Exactly.
And the rationale for recommending approval of this is what again?
The development standards that we hoped to apply to the site are emulated by conditions of approval that were put on the site through a land division process. We were not aware of that at the time this was going through. They both seek to create the same conditions in the end run here. So we feel that the having additional zoning criteria on top of this doesn't make any sense.
And is it safe, based on what you've just said then, is it safe to say that it does not disturb the overall integrity of the plan you brought to us, for which there was some concern?
It does exactly what we hoped the plan would do.
Okay. Thank you.
So I had, questions on Amendment 4. The Planning Commission recommendations that are contained in your summary here, LR1 and LR2, to basically pursue a master plan.
Yes.
And then reinvestigate FAR and height increases.
Yes.
Were these recommendations since we last had our hearing on this?
No, these were prior to.
And are we taking testimony today?
Yes, on the amendments, yes.
So I guess, you know, obviously there's been questions raised about the one waterfront FAR issue. And I guess we'll probably hear testimony on that, but you just mentioned ODOT's traffic investigation has been calibrated or
they've reviewed our findings and our modeling, and they concurred with our assumptions and our modeling results. They were concerned that we put more FAR into the system, we are getting to a point where they start to become more troubled. But they felt that currently the system could hold, they concurred with our findings that our system could hold what was being proposed.
And did they specifically find the additional FAR being requested by One Waterfront would
They didn't look into that investigation because that's not what was before them. It was our modeling didn't look at that. Our modeling had already determined that we would throw it over. It did look at the entire stretch of NATO, not just the one waterfront site. So we were equitable in terms of how we would apply FAR there. If we were going to increase one site, we were going to increase them all. Mm-hmm. That was one issue that was before them. Planning Commission looked at both that. They also looked at the urban form considerations there as well, because mm-hmm. if you put another 2-to-1 FAR on a site that's 143,000 square feet, it adds a significant amount of building massing to that site. So there was some concern about what that would, what the impacts of that would be. That's why when they were considering that and other floor area requests before them back in March, they wanted to make sure that those kind of requests were looked at more through the Central Portland plan, when we could also develop and evaluate those kind of requests through a master planning tool that would allow the Design Commission a little more discretion at considering what those kind of impacts would be.
So is the master planning effort then going to emanate from the Central Portland plan, or
yes.
would it? Okay, so the Central Portland plan, we adopt something at some point.
Yes, it's a fairly large.
That's the basis for beginning master planning regulations then for this.
Yes, those types of tools are fairly complex, and we're working on that for both these sites as well as other large sites in the central city, and we would imagine probably elsewhere in the city.
Okay, thanks.
Mauricio, did you have anything to add to this?
No. I have a question for Mauricio. Sure. Have we found out how we're going to pay for Portland to Milwaukee light rail yet?
Not yet. Working on it.
Thank you.
Thank you, folks. How many folks do we have signed up to testify?
We have two people signed up.
Please call them forward.
Jim Winkler and Bob Nato.
Please state your name when you speak.
Thank you. My name is Jim Winkler. I'm one of the co-managing partners of One Waterfront Place. I wanted to reiterate my sense that based on the transportation analysis that we've paid for, the study before you with from a transportation point of view is both inaccurate and inadequate, and that to suggest to you that as a policy proposition, major decisions shouldn't be made on the basis of insufficient data, that abstracting from a regional transportation demand analysis intended to support light rail extension from Portland to Milwaukee is an inadequate basis for making a major zoning decision. Moreover, the part that I found particularly troubling is that there's an inconsistency between what's being required here and what is typically required, whether it be a city bureau, BES, or parks that would have a zone change, and an individual citizen. This is a much, much lower standard. And because it's such a low standard, there's no real transparency here. It's not clear exactly how you come to whatever conclusion you come to. And if it isn't universalizable, I would suggest to you that a decision shouldn't be relied upon. The second aspect of the Pearl District plan that is troubling, to me at least, is the whole notion of a point tower, a residential form that's being applied through the maximum facade length. The plan has a 5-page section entitled Sustainable Community Concepts, with which I am 100% in accord, talking about the city's vision for a national and international leadership in progressive high-performance buildings and fuel reductions and standards in excess of 50% or more of ASHRAE standards. This really is an important aspirational goal for our city. But if we start mandating point towers that are noted for having inherently worse energy performance without doing any kind of analysis on that building form, then I think we begin to erode our credibility in the environmental community. Much of our economic development strategy is predicated on an appeal to sustainable jobs and sustainable industries. If we don't walk the talk, if we have such a clear disconnect between advanced energy modeling and design and building form and what's being mandated for the North Pearl District, then I think we render our credibility in the environmental community compromised and as a result may negatively impact our ability to recruit new jobs and industry to Portland. Finally, in a certain sense, and I hadn't thought of this before, but I now feel strongly about this, we are an entitled project. We can go forward with our design, which has a floor plate considerably larger than that which is recommended in the proposed North Pearl District study. But should our plan, because of economic conditions, not be built, then we would have to redesign. And that's something we're loath to do after spending $4 million to design it. And one final thought, the example that is in the North Pearl District of an aspirational project is the case study of the Oregon Health Sciences Center for Health and Wellness, a LEED Platinum building. That building is 16 stories, 412,000 square feet, or roughly twice the footprint that would be allowed under the North Pearl District plan. It seems very peculiar to me to, in your case study, use a template of an existing building that you couldn't build under this plan. Thank you.
Mr. Winkler, can I just follow up to make sure I understand one of your arguments? You said you're an entitled project. You're moving forward. If for some reason you didn't proceed with this,
right,
your argument is that you'd be forced to redesign a new building, which you had intended to be for commercial use, an office space, in a point tower design, which, as you explained to us last time, doesn't work for office.
That's exactly
space.
Right. We're entitled, meaning that we could go get a building permit and build this thing anytime within 3 years from the design review decision. And that seemed like it was going to happen. And I still hope it happens and think it might happen. But every day that I read the Wall Street Journal, I become concerned about people postponing decisions to build office buildings. And if for some reason this project didn't get under construction or get a building permit in 3 years, the project, as approved, could not be built under the North Pearl District plan. And then we would have to throw away the plans and start over.
So what would be your recourse at that point if you had to redesign but you wanted some adjustment to the plan?
You know, I'm not completely certain because the plan allows the design commission a certain latitude, but our floor plate is considerably bigger than what would be permitted.
And I'm asking this because I'm interested in knowing. I don't know the
answer. I honestly am not sure whether we could appeal it to you, which is what I think is the case, that we would be able to appeal a denial to City Council, which could then make a decision to allow the previously entitled project to proceed.
But we're talking about a contingency.
Yeah.
And your argument is if these contingencies occur and you have to go back to square one, you don't want to be prejudiced by having to adhere to design standards, which would not work, in your opinion, at that site.
Right, or for any really advanced office building.
So when Joe comes back, I'm interested in knowing what your recourse is at that point. But we are talking about a contingency because your first choice, I take it, is to continue with your current plan.
Oh, absolutely, and that's our intention. But you know, as you read the newspapers and you read that in New York City, for example, there's been a 25% increase of empty office space in the last few months, it certainly gives you the sense that things may slow down a bit.
The other thing I wanted to ask you, though, is that when I listened to you last time and now again, it seems like the heart of your argument is a principle that may never actually apply to you. I mean, your current project, you're planning to build within a framework that doesn't even use all the available FAR.
That's correct. But I think one point I'd like to make is when Troy made that statement, our current plan is a phased plan in which we have planned to build only the first phase. And we left the southern portion of our site undeveloped. It's just going into grass as an interim stage with the intention of doing an urban infill project subsequently. Our plan is to use all of the FAR available to us. And certainly we could modify our plan to do that. The urban form argument is somewhat, I hesitate to use the word, but disingenuous in the sense that we have the Broadway Bridge going over our site, so the majority of our site, 85,000 of the 143,000 square feet, is a parking structure beneath a bridge. Now, there's no possibility of building on top of the Broadway Bridge or particularly close to the Broadway Bridge. So that was really kind of a red herring. We have built about as big a building as we can, taking advantage of the various bonuses that we qualify for, which is essentially all of them.
But again, so I understand just the implications of your argument. If you did get the additional FAR and you weren't going to build on the site, then you would theoretically have the right to transfer that to some other property owner for a price.
Yes. I mean, I Commissioner Fish, we would have been just as happy and had proposed a friendly amendment that we'd hoped to sit down with planning about and talk about being exempted from the North Pearl District plan. I wanted to be treated identically to the other to the other parcels within the North Pearl District area, and which was the decision of the original committee that had worked on it. About 45 days after they met, there was an email saying that preliminary traffic data indicated that there wasn't enough traffic capacity, and then the properties along NATO Parkway were treated differently. We met with them. They produced a series of arguments. We hired traffic advisors. We disagree with their conclusions. I think they've dismissed ours. But that was a fairness argument and an allocation argument, and we simply disagree about that. The issue with the Point Tower is, I really think, a couple of things. It's an urban form that planners like. It lets light penetrate deeply. It gets away from a canyon effect. But we have little blocks, not major blocks like you'd see in New York City. And by building small floor plate buildings, we compromise our ability to achieve true energy independence and reduce our carbon footprint. They are inherently less efficient. I take exception to that as a citizen and someone who embraces sustainability on a serious level. I think that we should not constrain too much the ability of people to make economic decisions, to make decisions about floor plates that work for their business function. And we shouldn't be in too big a hurry to emulate the aesthetic of Vancouver, Canada. And so I think it's a mistake to take a residential form and apply it universally.
So my final question, Mr. Winkler, is that one or more of my colleagues last time asked you whether you'd had a chance during the committee process to raise concerns that you had. And I think you heard from the discussion that we had that there was some reluctance to start doing some, discrete modifications to a plan that seemed comprehensive. And in fact, in the discussion concerning Mr. Bachrach and Riverscape development, there was a sense that just it wasn't appropriate to sort of make the kind of adjustment that was requested. So can you help me understand why, in light of what I think you've heard from this council about its deference to a fully integrated plan, why your particular issue should be the exception?
Well, let me see if I can answer it this way. We trusted completely in the fairness of that process and had an architect who represents us and some other people on that committee. So until that committee had completed its process, we had no disagreements. It was subsequent to those deliberations that the disagreements arose when there was a modification based on traffic. Now, we have attempted to meet with, and on two occasions have succeeded in meeting with planning to discuss our disparate views. I think that in this case, if there's any reason for an exception, it has to do with the fact that the city historically has required traffic studies. If the Bureau of Environmental Services wanted to rezone a parcel to do something, it would require to have a traffic study. When Gil last testified, he talked about Jeff Bachrach saying if he wanted this, Jeff could get a rezone and he'd have to have a traffic study. A traffic study is a microeconomic, corridor-level, empirically tested, field-verified study that deals with reality. To abstract from a transportation document prepared for a regional transportation expansion of light rail to Milwaukee is not a reliable tool upon which to do serious planning. It's a convenience. I don't know why it was selected. I don't know why there's a rush to judgment. But I would think that we're the only people who feel strongly about that, and perhaps the intensity of our passion for this issue and the fact we genuinely believe that it is bad policy to rely upon such a study is the reason for any sort of an exception. But in the alternative, I would feel just as happy if you were to redraw the borders of the North Pearl District so you understand how seriously I feel about this and exclude our property. Okay, then we would have no standing at all in the discussion. There'd be nobody saying our self-interest was at stake. I just think that this was an inappropriate way in which to approach it from a planning perspective, from a policy perspective. I think it is inadequate and insufficient traffic analysis. There's no way to ever question something that says we'll wait until we do something later. And it smacks of just a decision made to move the ball along. The Point Tower or small floor plate matter is one also that's the same thing. It's what's the rush to judgment? Why are we going to mandate an urban form that's residential in nature for all construction? Why would we do something that would compromise our standing in the environmental community without any kind of energy analysis or study? I think we've seen an insufficient effort on the part of planning. We feel very strongly about that.
So what did your independent traffic analysis indicate?
Well, it began by suggesting that there was enormous capacity along NATO Parkway and that the problems were elsewhere, and that the traffic analysis zones immediately adjacent to our site that were relied upon in the transportation model were completely wrong. A transportation study would show, as the study we had to do to try and get a signal, demonstrate capacity through 2030. What it shows is that even if we were granted 4-to-1 FAR, there's enormous capacity within the corridor. Moreover, the arguments that were offered by planning were first that there was a problem on NATO Parkway, and then when we pushed back, it was a problem on at the intersection of 9th and NATO. And then finally, it was a problem at the intersection of 9th and Lovejoy. Well, our traffic study shows that 9th and Lovejoy is either in failure today or will be in failure if no changes are made in the very near future. Our traffic study looked at whether or not we were contributing materially to the problems at 9th and NATO. Maurizio, I believe, testified that there was a problem at 9th and Lovejoy. For us to do that, we looked at that very carefully in our traffic study. For us to get to 9th and Lovejoy, you have to go through the signal at NATO Parkway and 1 Waterfront and take a left. So you wait for the signal to turn green. You then proceed north-ish on NATO Parkway and turn immediately into the refuge lane on 9th and NATO. Wait for the signal to turn green and take a left, and then work your way to Lovejoy, where, because it's in failure, it takes 2 or 3 signal changes to take a left and go over the Broadway Bridge. Our traffic analysis was that people are likely to choose the path of least resistance, and that most of them would choose to take a right out of our project, skipping the signal and going to the Steel Bridge. And timing how much time it takes to, say, get to Lloyd Center, going from the Steel Bridge or the Broadway Bridge, not surprisingly, we believe most people will choose to take the Steel Bridge so that we'll have a minimal impact on 9th and Lovejoy. So our traffic studies are very much at variance. The gravamen is, of course, the capacity along NATO Parkway. Our study would indicate that there is vast capacity on NATO Parkway with its 87-foot-wide right-of-way, unless, of course, we plan to have 40-foot-wide bike paths, in which case that capacity would be constrained. But there's plenty of capacity on NATO Parkway. That isn't it. It's almost as though someone said there's some concern about capacity. Let's just eliminate any additional traffic on NATO Parkway. Then we don't have to discuss the issue. So in that sense, it's a question of fairness, of allocation, and whether or not we actually know what the facts are when we make a significant planning decision.
And where are you? You mentioned you have 3 years from the time of design review. Where are you in that 3-year?
Oh, well, we just got the design review. We're very early in it. A month or two? 3 months ago we got the design review, and we're engaged in substantive conversations, but it is only the fact that as I repeatedly read the various financial newspapers that come out, I start thinking, well, maybe we'll be in a very different situation. In 2001, we had about 70% of the building spoken for that we conceived of at that time on this site. We had 9/11, and we put the project into hiatus mode. And then there was a change in the building code from the Uniform Building Code to the International Building Code. And that gave us the pleasure of redesigning for $2.5 million. I don't want to watch that same movie again. Thank you.
Other questions?
Mr. Mayor, Commissioners, Bob Nato, 721 Northwest 9th, Suite 200, Portland. I think I'll skip what I was going to testify about and pick up on something that Commissioner Fish was talking about and see if we get any traction here on a possible alternative amendment. The Amendment 4 that planning has basically takes the FAR and the height issue on our site and sends it off to the Central City Plan. And simultaneously with that, there's a development of this master planning process that would affect kind of super block sites like ours anyway. So one suggestion, which I think I'm not sure if Jim made it seriously or not, and we haven't talked about it, but one possibility would be just to redraw the line and leave the 1 Waterfront site under the old rules. We don't think we're gaining anything in the North District plan, obviously, or we wouldn't be here. We think we're actually losing something. You could take an action item that would simply take one waterfront site, and all of these issues about FAR and height then could be taken up with the Central City plan. Like, that's a simple solution that lets us move ahead and kind of removes the issue. If that doesn't have any appeal, I guess I was just going to testify on one limited issue that I think affects us, but it also affects the other blocks in the North District plan, and that is this whole issue of the not the floor area limitation, which is what Jim was testifying about, where if you go over 175 feet in height, then everything above 100 feet has to be constrained to this 12,500-foot floor plate, which is a residential floor plate. There's another provision in here that says that if you go over 100 feet, the building can't be any longer in its facade than 150 feet. So now you get a very strange building that looks surprisingly like the Portland building. It's going to be 150 by 150 as the maximum floor plate. I think you could also take all of those facade limitation provisions and set them aside from this plan and have an action item from the council to planning that says take that item up in the Central City plan. It's certainly an issue that would apply to all of the blocks in downtown, not just this North Pearl area.
Could you explain that one more time?
Okay.
The facade thing.
There's two sets of limitations on the development, on the building envelope or the building mass in the North Pearl plan. One is the point tower restriction, which is if you go over 175 feet, all of a sudden everything above 100 feet is constrained to this small footprint.
Yeah, I get that part.
Okay, there's a whole other set of regulations that says if you go over 100 feet, you can't build a building that is longer in length than 150. Now, there was some testimony, or there was a meeting with, I think, Mr. Doss and Hoyt Street and Gering Edlin, and I think Opus, and they have added this modification that lets you modify that to go to 180 feet at design review if you can meet the criteria. And I think the criteria are, to use the word arbitrary, I mean, I think the criteria are just like Jell-O. I don't know how anybody goes forward with that and how the design commission takes what they've got and does anything with it. My point is, you've already got the restriction on the floor plate. And this whole issue is really over the old, remember the battleship condominium buildings, the first ones that went up that were limited to 75 feet. So they went all the way, curb to curb, straight up, six stories. And people in the neighborhood said, this is just going to turn into an entire district of six-story block-to-block buildings. So the 75-foot limitation was eliminated. Now you've got buildings going to 150, 175, 225 feet. And I don't see anybody objecting in the design review or at the council saying these buildings are too massive. So just take that one restriction, which is this facade length issue, and send it to the Central City plan, and let's talk about it for all the blocks and the entire core. I mean, we have these 200 by 200 foot blocks. They're unusually small, and that's what gives the city the character. That also means you can't build massive buildings because they can't be any longer than 200 feet. And this whole 150, 120 is just, I think it has the potential for some real unintended consequences. But the real consequences from our standpoint is going to make it very difficult under those rules to build a Class A office tower anywhere in the North Pearl District.
So your preference at this point is to be removed from the North Pearl plan.
That's one.
And then have a directive from us concerning facade length issues to the Planning Commission. I realize that's one of your options, yeah. The other one is we just grant you the FAR here, but
if I think we're pretty much conceding that the first option isn't going to happen.
If we were to entertain that option of taking you out, wouldn't we be guilty of what many people raised in the last hearing about just doing spot zoning? Wouldn't this be tantamount to us just engaging in spot zoning when presented with a comprehensive plan?
Can I respond to that? I mean, if the justification for disparate treatment of our property was that we are on, as it were, the east side of the railroad tracks, then the justification for treating us differently or removing us is the same justification that we are on the east side of the railroad tracks.
I suppose I'm, in listening to the discussion, concerned that we're not looking at this from the 1,000-foot level. That is, this is a plan coming forward that is intended to bring a specific character and sense of place to the Pearl District. And I become concerned when we start taking out of context individual pieces that, while your arguments may make sense, in the particular, in the general, they may confound an otherwise thoughtful plan. And it isn't that I have any objections to the substance of what you're arguing. I don't. What I'm concerned about is not having been involved, the council not having been involved in this entire discussion for the entire time, us now going in and making some exceptions that end up causing some unintended consequences to the entire flavor of the plan that has been developed. Which is why at the last hearing I was asking you about your involvement and why didn't you raise these issues in the context of the discussion that was happening. And I remain to have that concern. Not that your arguments aren't sound, but if they are sound or were sound, I would have much more appreciated having the discussion happen within the context of this plan being developed rather than coming here and having us without the benefit of that entire thought process from everybody. Making some judgment that replaces
I think that's a very fair observation, Commissioner Leonard, but I'd like to say that until 45 days after that process was completed, all properties were being treated alike, so we had no issues. And the matter of the maximum facade length and the floor plate restrictions came up at Planning Commission. It was presented at the final Planning Commission meeting. We took exception to it then. There was a subsequent meeting that we were not invited to, which other developers were invited, and which there were some modifications to that proposal made. So I think in fairness, I'm totally sympathetic with your concern, but it's not clear to me that, yes, as I look back on it, I now think, yeah, I really shouldn't have relied on the fact that our architect was there. We probably should have joined. We shouldn't have been that lazy. But we became engaged as soon as there was a difference of view, and we've been vociferously engaged, perhaps to the consternation of some of our friends at planning. And
I guess that's the part that's troubling me. If what you're arguing makes sense, why is it that those folks don't recognize that, according to you, you haven't been involved in the process appropriately and that your arguments have some reason?
Well, we didn't see the transportation stuff. That didn't come up. There was an email that went out that went to a member, in this case, John Meadows, who's an architect who represents us, who shared it with us. That's the point at which we got engaged, 45 days after the advisory committee and all those people had met. If you read the notes from all the charrettes, they were totally consistent with the positions we've taken. The whole issue about facade length, the issue about small floor plates, this emerged far later than the technical advisory group meetings. This came up at Planning Commission. And
so I'd be interested in hearing is then from the staff respond to that. Because as I said, I don't have a quarrel, and I don't think anybody here necessarily has the quarrel with the substance of what you're arguing. I just want to make sure we're not doing something that creates some unintended consequence. And I'm less concerned, which would be in your benefit, if the staff comes forward and says, well, just they're right, but they didn't get here and they should have been here, that actually adds some credence for me to your argument. If they have some response about the substance of what you're arguing, I'd like to hear that, particularly the traffic analysis, because it sounds like a lot of this stands on conflicting traffic analyses.
Or whether it was done. But, yes, I agree with you.
Well, I'd like to hear their response to the idea that we would remove this parcel from the Fourth Pearl as well.
Further questions for these folks?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do we have another person sign up?
We do. Ben Gates.
Please come forward. You state your name for the record, and then you have 3 minutes.
Hello, my name is Ben Gates with Central City Concern, an architect and developer of affordable housing. Commissioners, Mayor, thanks for the opportunity to testify today. I was a member of the North Pearl District Planning Advisory Committee, along with 20-odd members, and I was just looking back at my notes and saw that our first meeting was in October of 2006. What was initially going to be a one-year planning process ended up taking a couple years, and here we are today, not 2006, not 2007, 2008. The project advisors, which represent a diverse group of individuals from neighborhood residents to developers, architects, other stakeholders, followed along with staff as we created this plan, looking both at the needs and aspirations of the community, the past Pearl District plan, as well as the River District Urban Renewal Plan, and worked on this plan over the course of a couple years. And I think, you know, as I look at the three different planning commission meetings and the second city council session today, I'm wondering why there's not more project advisory groups here today. And I think it's because we're a little bit burned out. We're ready to see this plan adopted and passed. The staff recommendations, I think, that you all saw went to the group of project advisors as well as other interested parties in this plan. And I think that the fact that there's nobody here testifying against the staff recommendations could be seen as broad support for the adoption as recommended by the staff with the city. So I would like to ask that City Council adopts this plan, as it does address very acute needs in the neighborhood. And I'll just give one example. The 2001 Pearl District Plan called for the creation of family units in the River District and the Pearl District. As the neighborhood has developed over the years, we saw that there hasn't been many affordable 2- and 3-bedroom units created. So what we did in the plan is we said, okay, we're going to remove the residential bonus. We're going to give a bonus for developers who would build efficiently sized 2- and 3-bedroom units, not penthouses, so that if those are developed, there's extra bonus density allocated to that site. Every month we wait on adoption of this plan, more buildings are developed in the North Pearl District. If we can adopt this plan now, there is not only this bonus to create more affordable market rate housing, but there's significant other priorities and goals of the neighborhood in this plan. And so I'd like to see this plan adopted so that we can get busy with following and carrying out this plan, which I think represents the needs of the community. Thank you.
If I could just respond to the core point you made at the beginning. I thought the community did an excellent job at our last hearing testifying, making the position very clear. I may be just speaking for myself, but I have a hunch I'm speaking for all my colleagues. There are 7 amendments. My sense is there's one amendment that contains a question of fact that we're struggling with. We're trying to better understand, or at least I'll say from my point of view. I think there are 6 that, because of the work that you did, because of the hearing, the presentation, and because of the work of staff subsequently, I think there's very little controversy there. There is one where, at least from my point of view, there's a factual and a legal issue that I'm just trying to better understand.
Mm-hmm.
But I take your point, which your point's important, and I would hope that none of us would have our decision swayed one way or another based on whether who's here to testify. We're, I think, trying to engage the issue Mr. Winkler raised and just understand it and address it.
Thank you. I appreciate for your interest in understanding it, but I definitely am looking forward to when this plan gets adopted. The sooner the better. There's many different goals and objectives and action items which are ready to be carried out in the district. Thank you.
So I'm confused about one thing, and that's on Amendment 4 that we were just right here in discussion about from Jim Winkler. is I thought I heard, and anybody can come up and respond to this.
We have staff come up from planning because
Jim may also want to come.
I think we still have one more.
We would request for someone else.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Ma'am, you want to come on up?
Good afternoon. Tiffany Schweitzer, 1022 Northwest Marshall with Hoyt Street Properties. Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. I've been at the last couple of, the last meeting here and all of the meetings with a member of the North Pearl Committee, attended the Planning Commission meetings, the design review meetings, took tours through the buildings to get a better perspective of what we were talking about, and have listened to everybody's testimony. And I felt like I needed to spend my 3 minutes here today first to help Ben, who came up. Thank you, Ben. To testify that we should move forward with this plan. There's been a lot of work. We talked about October of 2006. For me, this started before October of 2006 when I first met with the planning director to say, we have a 2-to-1 FAR and we're required to build more housing than anybody else in the city. At what point are we going to raise that FAR? I then put a master plan together at the expense of our company, met with all of the bureaus to look at that plan, to get comments. That was well before 2006. So this has been a plan that has people have spent a lot of time on, have had great comments, input, sometimes arguments. We've ended up agreeing to disagree on some points. And I think it is beneficial for the North Pearl neighborhood. I am probably the biggest benefactor of this plan at this point, so I want to make that known. But I think it's important that we finally move on and start looking at some other things in the city besides this North Pearl plan, which has had really no resistance. I mean, in the end, after the effort that we all like to see in this city, we've come to a very good place, a place where, and you heard it the last meeting, I don't know, 15-plus people testifying very positively about the work that's been done. I know that Troy, Gil, Joe have worked we've had sidebar meetings, they've been at all of these meetings, tried to take everybody's comments into consideration and have done a very good job of putting this together. So I won't take any more time, but I urge your approval. Thank you.
Is that it?
That's
staff?
It.
Any questions from the commissioners?
So I heard Mr. Winkler say that he would be okay with taking their parcel out of this plan and having some of these issues flushed out as part of the Central Portland plan. But I'm looking at the recommendation, and the recommendation from the staff says staff recommends denying the request at this time and forwarding the request as action to be analyzed as part of the Central Portland plan. The basis for this recommendation is twofold: one, transportation impacts, and two, urban form considerations. So I'm not understanding how this recommendation doesn't do what you asked, Jim. And so
I actually could respond to that a little bit. What he's indicating is that our request to look at it through the Central Portland plan would be to look at the FAR issues and the solely, not the building massing issues. He raises a fair point in that during the Planning Commission and Design Commission subsequent review of this, there was testimony about looking at maybe having a maximum facade length requirements put on all the buildings we were looking at before we didn't have that restriction. It was vetted pretty heavily through a series of 3 additional design commission hearings, I think 2 planning commission hearings. What it resulted in was a new facade length maximum for buildings that go above 100 feet. So if your building is taller than 100 feet, up to 175 feet, the commission's imposed a 150-foot maximum facade length. However, you can get a modification through a design review up to 180 feet. I heard that the description of the approval criteria was arbitrary. However, it was reviewed heavily by both design and planning commission. They feel it's effective, and it does include consideration of things such as economic development and office development. So that's why we would allow these larger floor plates. There was reference to a meeting we had with some of the developers. Actually, we were asked to have that meeting by some of the developers because they were concerned about these restrictions, and they didn't all agree with this. They felt that these floor plates may be a little restrictive as well. In the end, they chose not to testify against it. One of the things that we did recognize was that even with 100...
Involved in that?
He was not, but it wasn't something that we specifically excluded him from. It was a call by some of the other developers. We were happy to meet with them about the issue. But one of the things I want to note is that the floor plate maximums that are still allowed, so let's say you did get an adjustment to 180,000 square feet, you'd still be allowed to develop a floor plate of about 32,400 square feet, which is larger than 20,000, which is what we was considered to be really the smallest floor plate you'd want to do for office development. In terms of point towers, you have to really be above 175 feet before you start getting into what would be considered a point tower type of floor plate. And even that is actually not really what Vancouver does. Their floor plate sizes are usually about 6 to about 7,000, 8,000 square foot maximum floor plates. Our maximum or floor plate size for the Pearl would be 12,500 square feet. That's comparable to the maximum tower sizes you see in South Waterfront. They're building LEED Gold and Platinum buildings with that floor plate.
So have you met with Jim or Bob since our last council meeting to talk about this?
No, we have not.
We met with them a couple of times in before the last council meeting and then during the Planning Commission process individually. The staff's recommendation does really focus on the FAR. Troy just addressed the floor plate size, and I just wanted to reiterate, you know, some findings of fact. The floor plate size limitation would be new under this, compared to what their existing zoning is. But
what's the difference?
I'm not exactly what this proposal would require is 32,500 square feet up to what height, Troy?
175 feet. In my understanding, I do not know the floor plate size for One Waterfront as proposed. I know that it's lower than 175 feet, and I know it doesn't use a full 40,000 square feet. At least I was pretty sure it didn't. However, the facades would probably be a little bit longer than 120 or maybe even 180. I'm not familiar enough with the project to say that for certain.
So the 32.5, those square foot for a floor plate, that's a commercial office building-sized floor plate. That's far from a point tower, up to that 175 feet.
Aside from the specifics, give me a flavor as to the concern I raised in terms of us doing something that could create development that's out of context. Is that accurate, or is there some better way you could sum up the difference between what he wants and what this requires that would give us a better understanding?
Let me start with explaining what the current regulations would do. The way you get height now above 100 feet in the Pearl is you go through a process by which you earn so much FAR, and then you get an additional 15 feet. You earn a little bit more FAR, you get some more, you get additional 15 feet. It's really incremental. And if you do residential development, you get an additional 75 feet automatically. What we chose to do in this case would say, let's not make it so incremental. Let's just go ahead and say, look, if you're using FAR bonuses to create that additional square footage above the 100 feet, you can go taller. Fine. The only limitation we're going to put on you is these facade lengths. And actually, as you may recall, once you're west of NATO Parkway, there is no maximum height. So you could get considerably taller, but you're going to stretch out that FAR, you know, into different floor plate sizes. So we really try to put a lot more flexibility there than it currently exists.
But some of this sounds like it's contingent upon some traffic analysis.
Right.
So is this driven by your analysis of potential failure of?
There's no additional transportation analysis required. I think what Mr. Winkler was identifying was that if you were to go through a zone change on your own, you'd have to pay for a transportation analysis that would be reviewed by the city. The transportation analysis that we conducted is this process. Yes, he's right in that the modeling data is most recent data that was generated by Metro. They updated their regional forecast projections based on what they were their models for, including the LRT process to go down to Milwaukee. However, it is the same modeling criteria that the city uses for all their current legislative processes.
And what I'm getting at is this is the proposed design standards you've developed driven by some concern about traffic?
There's two issues, Commissioner. How much development? That's the floor area ratio, the FAR question. That's what we model through the traffic studies. And as you heard Ms. Schweitzer say, the reason we even initiated this plan is it was the last place in the central city with something as low as 2 to 1. This high-growing, residential, successful district.